design,
analysis,
performance,
books,
sound,
here on RN.
Hello and welcome to Life Matters. Robbie Buck in the chair with you this morning. Hope you're well. Tell me, what kind of neighbour are you? Do you help out when a neighbour's in need? Do you socialise with them? Or do you prefer to keep your distance? There's nothing better than that feeling of having people living around you that you can rely on, that, you know, will be there for you in a bind, or at the very least, offer up a friendly smile. But the opposite can be true too. When neighbourly relationships sour, well, it can be hell, can't it? The feeling of dread when you open the front door just in case you run into them. So what makes for great neighbours? And what happens when you're stuck living next to someone you just can't stand? How do you navigate that? This morning on Life Matters, it's all about you and your neighbours. And we'd love to hear from you. The number here, 1300 225 576. That's 1300 225 576. Yesterday, we began the show with Rolly and Katrina, two neighbours from the Blue Mountains who've been coping with the devastating impact of the fires there over the last week. And it makes you realise that it's at these times that neighbours really depend on each other, sometimes for survival itself. As you've seen this week, amongst all the devastation, disasters can bring out the best in us. But away from those kinds of extremes, what do you think makes for good neighbours? Is it important to be friends with your neighbours? Has your neighbour been there for you when you needed them? And if so, in what way? And what happens when it all goes horribly wrong? Barking dogs, overhanging trees, noisy floorboards, controlling neighbours. What neighbourly behaviour drives you mad? And how did you deal with it? That's what we're discussing this morning, and I'd love to hear from you. Give us a call. Are you friends with your neighbours, past or present, enemies, or perhaps somewhere in between? The number here, 1300 225 576. That's 1300 225 576. If you're in South Australia, call us now. If you're in Western Australia, the NT or Queensland, you can ring our listener feedback line. That's 02 833 1430. Or if you'd like to join us via the wonders of modern technology, text us on 0418 226 576. Drop by the Facebook page or send us a message on Twitter. That's at RN Life Matters. Joining me for this morning's discussion, Dr. Cindy Knorr, a clinical psychologist, Andrew Heslop, the founder of Neighbour Day, and John Elliott, named Adelaide's best neighbour by the Adelaide Advertiser newspaper after being nominated by his neighbours. Welcome to all of you this morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
John, considering this is a conversation about neighbours, good and bad, it's probably a good place to start with you. What made your neighbours nominate you as Adelaide's best neighbour?
No, I think mainly is the fact that I wander around the neighbourhood and do little odd jobs for them. And they're all love jobs. They're not. I don't go out looking for little odd jobs that pay a few dollars here and there. I do it all for nothing.
So how long's this quite delightful behaviour been going on for?
Since my retirement. See, I'm 69 and I've been retired just a bit before 65.
Mm-hmm.
And from there on, I had to have something to do. So the best thing was to cut the nature strips and just move along and do little jobs. I normally put the wheelie bins out of night time, bring them in, wash them. If they need washing, I bring them home and wash them all.
This is for your neighbours?
This is for the neighbours, yes.
Goodness me.
But I've got a good bunch of neighbours, and it's true what you say. It's you do need each other. And I've noticed since I've been doing this, the neighbours have got something in common, even if it's me wandering up and down the street doing little jobs.
That is a really interesting point, and we will get to that, actually, as part of this discussion. Tell me, how did they react when you first started doing these little odd jobs, as you call them, and, you know, helping out? How did the neighbours respond to it? Were they initially a little bit confused as to why you might be doing it?
Well, going back, initially, the neighbours I had were very elderly neighbours, and I started doing it because they were neighbourly. Well, most of them have passed on, and as people have moved in, as the streets change, I just carried on doing it, you know, because you're doing it for one neighbour, so you might as well do it for the next one.
Have you always been so helpful? Has it always been something in your approach to life?
Looking back, yes, I've always helped people. Even in my working days, when we were working, I'd go and give friends a bit of a hand and do a few jobs for them, and you know, give them the skills that I had.
Mm. So, how do they respond, and what change have you seen in your neighbourhood since you've started taking such an active role in it?
As I say, the way I see it, that they have been a better community. You know, because there's something in common where they're going to say, oh, yeah, John's been over your place today, and we've seen John up your street. And, there's an old couple around the street, and Colin and Joyce, and they always phone up. You know, Joyce always phone up, John, I've got a little job for you. And I go over there and do it. Look, I was only there the other day, and it was putting up a fluoro. And you know, putting up a fluoro tube.
Mm.
So they're only simple jobs.
Yeah. Can I ask you this, though, John? This takes a lot of time, a lot of your effort. You could be doing other things with your retirement, and many other people go off and take trips and all sorts of things. What's the motivation for you? What's the payback for you? Away from awards?
It gives me a lifestyle. It gives me something to do. I've always been an active sort of a person. And rather than, go away on trips all the time and lock up and go, I've done all that, been there, done all that, and now you've got to have something to do when you're not doing these sort of things.
Mm.
So to wander up and down the street, and I'm always riding my bike around the place. So
they go, there goes John.
And, you know, there's an elderly couple around the street. They've still got a fireplace, so I cut wood for them. If there's any branches fell off any trees anywhere, I cut them up and take around to them because it's something they can use.
Mm, John, I can understand, after just chatting with you for a few minutes, I can understand how you took out Adelaide's Best Neighbour Award, I have to say. At this point, I might bring in Andrew Heslop, who's the founder of Neighbour Day, and I'm sure John's story is bringing a smile to your face, Andrew. This is the kind of almost poster boy for what your initiative stands for, isn't it?
He absolutely is, and I was just reflecting that, in fact, one of my relatives has just had a stroke. He lives in Adelaide and is in his late 80s, and he is absolutely devastated that he is now unable to drive and unable to help his neighbours who he took to medical appointments and helped the ladies do their shopping and do a whole raft of things. He's now got to be replaced by a gopher to get about.
Mm.
But it is one of those things that we really forget how important our neighbours are to us until something goes wrong. And John especially espouses those values of thinking about others and doing something practical to help, but not actually interfering directly in their lives.
Mm. John, is this something that that you see yourself doing, and you know, for the foreseeable future?
Yes.
Good.
Yes. it's the lifestyle that you develop, and not only that, it's your attitude to life.
Yeah.
You know, it's something you do, something you can do, and so you might just well go out and do something constructive. You know, I'm not a TV watcher. I don't sit around watching telly all day, so you've got to have something to do.
All right. Well, look, congratulations not just on the award, but really on your approach to life and being so involved with your neighbourhood. And
I
think you're a bit of an inspiration to all of us.
John's the kind of guy who really weaves the fabric of our communities together and our streets and our suburbs together, because they're the people who are who are fairly much the linchpin. And as he has described through his examples, you actually don't have to put in a lot of effort, but what you actually do has to be meaningful to get your neighbours behind you. And, you know, I like you, no doubt that he is Adelaide's best neighbour.
Yeah. That said, before you retired, John, you were very busy, weren't you? So it's really only at a certain point in your life that you've taken this involvement.
Yeah, well, look, when I was working, I was ship's work, I was driving the Adelaide buses around, and I didn't know the neighbours as much because you was off to work all the time, come home and do your own thing, and you never got to know the neighbours. My wife knew the neighbours more than I did.
Mm.
And now it's reversed. I knew the neighbours more than she does.
Yeah, I bet you do.
Yes.
All right. Well, look, thanks so much for joining us for this discussion this morning and getting us off on such a good footing too. John Elliott, voted Adelaide's best neighbour. All the best with it, John.
Thank you very much.
Good on you. The number here, if you'd like to join us, 1-300-225-576. And we are discussing what it is that makes good neighbours. Of course, conversely, on the other side of that, there are always horror stories about bad neighbours or just some fun stories too. Who knows? Maybe neighbours that were a little bit surprising to you in one way or another. 1-300-225-576. We might take a call this morning. Let's go to Edwina, who's in New South Wales.
Hi, Robbie.
Hello, Edwina. Yeah, what's your attitude towards the nature of the neighbour?
Well, I've been very lucky. £10 POMs in 1959. We ended up in Sydney. With three mortgages, building a house in a little cul-de-sac on the North Shore. It was actually Narrabeen. And most of our neighbours were similar age to us and bringing up their children. And the fact that it was a cul-de-sac, all the kids played together or in one particular house, so we all knew where they were. And we were all broke, you know, because there was no credit then. Mm. So our life was our neighbours. Which was wonderful, and I'm still in touch with all of them. And then husband got very sick, and we just finished the house, had to move to a suburb where he could be on one level because he had cancer. Hated the suburb, got to know the neighbours, wonderful neighbours, they still are. I'm 78, two of my neighbours have got my house key in case they haven't seen me for a while and I might be, you know, have a problem. But I'm still out and about, still involved with the neighbours' children. I've got Lebanese, Italians, Chinese, Australians. It's wonderful, just wonderful.
It's a great deal of trust there. The way you're describing it is, you know, handing over your keys to your front door. It's handing over your life in some ways.
I've got a key to the neighbours across the road.
Yeah.
And, I'm so lucky.
Yeah.
So very lucky.
Thanks for your call this morning, Edwina.
Okay, bye-bye.
Nice to hear from you. Margaret, also in New South Wales, good morning to you.
Good morning, Rob.
Yes, neighbours, they can be important. They can also be darned annoying.
Well, dangerous, if you ask me. I've got some delightful neighbours on either side of me. My dear old neighbour was killed on Christmas Day, run down by a speeding police car.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Yes, it was a terrible tragedy. It was one of your wonderful neighbours. But my neighbours over the road, who watch our every move, I think they have a security camera on us, but unfortunately they're my son's in-laws, and the fellow drunk bashed my son, who was a non-drinker, broke his nose, split his lips, blacked his eyes.
This is almost the very worst. We've gone from the very best with John and with Edwina straight to the very worst.
Oh, it's awful. And I just admire the likes of Edwina and John, and I'm a touch envious that such a lovely community out there. But I had, there was a battle axe subdivision right next door to me, and the people had dogs. And on three occasions, one Christmas Day, two of their dogs killed my sheep. I have a big backyard, and my sheep are my gardeners. They whippersnip, prune and mow the lawns. And Christmas Day, about 4 years ago, they killed two of my sheep. And last year, I had another sheep that was going out to get married. Not a same-sex marriage, but I went down to get her. We called her Mascara because she had a black mark over her eye, and she'd been chased down and killed by the neighbour's dog.
So, Margaret, how did you deal with this? I mean, this is part of this conversation this morning. Is when it's going swimmingly, when it's great relationships with your neighbours, then it's a really fantastic situation. Unfortunately, as we know and as your call highlights, it's not always that way. How did you deal with this situation?
Well, the fellow that bashed my son, we have he has an AVO on him, but he's not observing it. He taunts my boys, I think he's trying to get them to do something silly like bash him, but they're of not that nature. Mm. And regarding the dogs, the police came around. A woman that owned the dogs had the decency to bring the police. I sent them on their way, and I said, "We'll deal with it between us." And she begged me to let her keep her dogs. Well, I said, "Keep them out of my backyard." And I said, because I love dogs, and I know how people are with their animals. Anyway, the following day, I went down the backyard, and I heard a dog that made a suspicious noise. So I went down, and they were both in my backyard again, chasing what remained of my sheep. Mm. And then one of the dogs went for me, and I said, "Enough's enough." And I said to the woman's partner, "Just kill one of the dogs, take it away or give it away, but don't take both of them, because that would be one dog is fine on their own."
Margaret, look, I'm really sorry to hear that it's been obviously a very difficult and upsetting situation for you and your neighbours, but at least it gives us a good point in which to address some of these aspects of neighbourly life. Thanks for your call this morning.
Okay.
I might bring in Dr. Cindy Noor this morning, who's a clinical psychologist, because those first two calls this morning raise quite a few really interesting aspects of how we deal with our neighbours. Let's just sort of go back to what Margaret's been saying there. How do you deal with such difficult neighbours like that, especially when you feel like they're intruding into your life in such a major way?
Yeah, I guess Margaret was quite generous to try and sort things out with her neighbour directly, but I think in those situations the police are probably the best point of contact, yeah.
What about in situations which aren't quite as extreme, when you've got niggling issues with your neighbours? What's the best way to approach it?
Well, you can always, I guess, open the lines of communication and have a chat to them, maybe over a coffee, or I also think just keeping your distance. So, you know, assessing your neighbours perhaps when you first move in, and then deciding then, are they the kind of people you want to be friends with? And if you do decide to be friends, you know, trying to work out how much of a friendship you want. Mm. And boundaries are pretty important. So if they're the kind of people you just want to say hi and bye to, you know, then you keep your boundary and you wave to them. But if you think you might get along with them and they might make great friends, then we've heard a lot about the benefits of good social support in a neighbourhood.
Well, we'll talk about the mental benefits of good neighbourhood support and good neighbours in just a moment. But sure. I might take another call this morning as well. Christine's in Victoria. Hello there, Christine.
Hi, good morning. I felt compelled to ring this morning because I usually miss your show, but I have really great neighbours, and when it was my chance to sort of say, "What are your neighbours like?"
Yeah.
I thought, ripper, I thought I'm going to ring.
Here's your chance.
It is my chance, because we live in a little town called Yakandand, a little old gold mining village, and we all live next to each other, but one's down the front, one's up the back, and there's a bit of space between. But we all are just are really kind of, I suppose we're similar in some ways, but we're all professional people, but we've all sort of come together with really good attitudes about community.
Mm.
And we, you know, for example, we all have small kids and we're all of the mind that it takes a village to raise a child, you know, so we're all really mindful of each other's children, and they'll hop over the back fence and play all the time together, and we share taking them to school in the mornings when one of us is working or one's not working. We sort of do the community walking school bus,
which is something that can save so much time in the long run, can't it? You realise that when you share some of those duties around with other families.
Yeah, it really does, and it just also helps the kids to grow up with that idea that everyone's helping each other out and we're all muddling along together, you know.
Yeah. Have you always lived in the country, Christine?
No, I've lived in quite a few countries in the world, actually, as have my neighbours as well. Mm. So we've all sort of ended up landing together.
But what about city versus country lifestyle? Because there's sometimes...
Very different.
The cliche goes that the people in the city don't talk to each other and the people in the country always talk to each other. I don't know if that's always necessarily the truth, though.
I don't know. I think sometimes in cities, friendship and can take some courage. You know, we lived in Hong Kong for many years and in, as you can imagine, really tight environment.
Mm.
And we could easily have not had anything to do with the people around us and in the apartments next door. You know, but there was a couple of occasions where we heard things going on, you know, domestic issues and things. And we could have ignored that, but I guess our attitude, my husband and I, was more, we come from Australia and we have this sense of community and helping and assisting and kind of being a bit Aussie bravado. So we would often knock on the door and kind of say, look, is everything okay in there? Or and then try and invite people for a cup of tea occasionally, just to make really soft inroads, really.
You sound like a very good neighbour, Christine.
Oh, no, but it's that idea. It comes back to humanity, doesn't it? And like your friend John said there about that attitude of wanting to help people or being open to it, Sometimes you set the seed by your own actions, don't you?
You do indeed. Look, thanks so much for your call this morning. Lovely
no
to
worries.
Hear from you.
Okay.
You're listening to Life Matters today. Robbie Buck in the chair for Natasha Mitchell. And it being a Friday, yes, we're taking calls. It's Talkback Friday. And this morning we're discussing the notion of the neighbour. What are your feelings when it comes to neighbours? What do you think is good neighbourly behaviour? Sometimes people can be too friendly, perhaps. Do you have a neighbour that has been with you for a long time that you have relied on over many years? Or, as we've heard earlier on, do you have neighbours that have been causing a lot of consternation for you? The number here, 1300 225 576, here on RN. Grant's in Sydney. Good morning, Grant.
Oh, good morning.
Now, you, from the country to the city, you live in Australia's biggest city.
That's right. Right in the middle of Sydney, in fact. And we have the opposite experience. For 35 years, we haven't had a neighbour next door.
Really?
The house is empty. It's not rented. It's derelict. Often the garden becomes overgrown. But, of course, there's no problem with wild parties or people stealing your milk or your newspaper.
That's true, although would you prefer to have some good neighbours next door to you as opposed to having an empty lot?
Well, no, it's not an empty lot. There's a house there. In fact, it's the oldest house in the street.
Right.
But it's just empty, and he lives elsewhere in Sydney, comes by from time to time to clean up the papers, but does so usually at night or in some time when he won't be seen. And he sort of creeps in and out.
But what's your response to it? Would you prefer to have somebody next door that you know is there, that you can rely on?
Well, the other side, the people on the other side have changed over those 35 years, as you can imagine. And they've always been, you know, pretty good. Mm. And we've got lots of other neighbourly friends on the street who are absolutely terrific and do all sorts of things. But I'll call him Melvin.
Okay.
Melvin just there. But the only problem is, of course, he has some trees in his garden, which occasionally overhang, and lightning strikes the branches, and all kinds of things happen. But Melvin doesn't want to know.
Right. See, it's. I mean, this is the conversation about neighbours is obviously a conversation about people, and for every kind of person, there's every kind of neighbour.
Well, he is a non-person. He's a non. Well, we know his real name.
Mm.
We think we know where he might live, because he does apparently pay the taxes on the land. But of course, it's extraordinary to have a house in the inner Sydney, going completely to rack and ruin,
yeah,
not being used at all.
It's quite mysterious. Good on you, Grant. Thanks so much for your call this morning.
Cheers. Bye.
Jane's in Victoria. Good morning, Jane.
Morning.
Yes, the notion of the neighbour. Do you like to have a good relationship with your neighbour, or do you prefer to keep your distance?
I love to have good relationships with my neighbours, yeah, which is part of the reason why I joined a group called the Sharehood.
The Sharehood?
Yes.
All right. Tell me about the Sharehood.
It's all about sharing in your neighbourhood. So it's giving a platform to people via the web to say, okay, well, these are the things that I'm willing to lend to my neighbours, and they might be anything from babysitting to extension ladders seem to be very popular, to, you know, sharing the skills that you have of, you know, speaking French or something like that. So it's about
the initial factor is, you know, saving money and not having to buy everybody having to buy a stepladder. But I take it the secondary effect is probably more worthwhile, which is the communication and that sense of feeling a tight-knit community.
Exactly. So that people find that connection with people. It's about, I think it's also about increasing the size of your neighbourhood. So I've been doing a project with the Sharehood in West Melbourne, and I've been going there often enough now that I start bumping into people that have come to the afternoon teas that we've had, and I was in the city and bumped into someone. So it's about extending your neighbourhoods as well and making them, you know, getting people to think of them as being a bit bigger and a bit more accessible as well.
All right. Look, thanks so much for your call this morning. Good luck with the Sharehood.
Thank you.
Andrew, I might come back to you because we sort of mentioned Neighbourhood Day earlier on, but the foundations for Neighbourhood Day, it's a sad story, isn't it?
It is. In 2003, an elderly woman was found in her Melbourne home, and she'd been dead for 2 years. And over that period of time, her neighbours had seen the newspapers and store catalogues and mail pile up at the front door, but they didn't make the connection between that evidence and something potentially being wrong for the woman who lived behind that door. And it wasn't until a neighbour finally remembered that she hadn't seen Elsie Brown for a really long time that she called Victoria Police, who broke in and discovered that she'd died upstairs on her sofa. And the coroner estimated she'd been there for 2 years. And so I had just been the national comms manager for Australian Red Cross, and I just thought, look, there's surely got to be a way that we can encourage Australians to reconnect, whether you are in a great relationship with your neighbours every day of the week, or you only see them periodically, or in fact you never see them at all, and using the sad death of Elsie Brown as the catalyst. And so that's how Neighbour Day began. And it's just been the most interesting experience, particularly through Jane's discussion about, you know, sharing things through her neighbours. It's been remarkable to see how much community networking is already in existence around Australia, where people do exactly what Jane does, where they share tools or they share resources like babysitting, that they might have street parties through the year for, you know, Christmas, New Year, other celebrations, that people are getting together. But being the catalyst for that has been quite interesting.
See, the catalyst is the key, isn't it? Because without somebody somewhere at some stage saying, why don't we do this, then it doesn't get done, even though perhaps for a lot of people they love the idea of having a little bit more involvement in their neighbourhood, in their community. That said, when Neighbourhood Day comes around, we're encouraged to knock on the door of somebody close by and introduce ourselves. For many people, that's a fairly confronting prospect, isn't it?
Look, it can be, but I think what we all need to, you know, kind of appreciate is that, you know, we're just one person in a whole community, and if every single person in that community never interacted, never spoke to each other, where we live would be very, very lonely places. And so just knowing who your neighbours are and being able to contact them in an emergency is really vital. Now, you might choose never to have anything to do with them, never to be friends, never to speak with them. But as we've seen through this week and last with the bushfires, through the Blue Mountains, and in other natural disasters that happen across Australia, you know, fairly frequently, knowing who your neighbours are is vital, not only to let them know that there might be danger approaching, but to check up on them when that danger has passed. And, you know, this is something that I think we really are getting to grips with more seriously these days, because having lived in the regional Victoria for a while, you know, living in a farming community where, you know, you need to know that, you know, your neighbour 10 kilometres, 20 kilometres down the street is okay, if particularly there's a bushfire coming.
How do you advise people to approach that conversation, the knock on the door?
I think really it is just that. It's that simple knock on the door. G'day, I'm Andrew. Here's my mobile phone number. If there's ever an issue or a problem, don't hesitate to give me a call. And that applies whether you live in a house, in an apartment, you live on a farm. And just taking that first step, you know, begins to break down that barrier. Now, if your neighbour says, yeah, thanks a lot, closes the door, at least, you know, you're confident that you've passed on that information. But the other side of it is when we've moved houses and you get yourself immersed into a new community, I always knock on the door, you know, in the first day or two and say, g'day. But I'm always surprised by people who will turn up with cakes and cups of tea and sandwiches as you're unpacking to welcome you to the street. And I think that's a lovely thing to do.
It is a wonderful thing to do. We're talking neighbours this morning. Andrew Heslop, who's the founder of Neighbour Day, and Dr. Cindy Knorr, who's a clinical psychologist. The mental benefits, Cindy, of what Andrew is talking about, do we have any understanding of what they are?
Yeah, we do. So we know that in the literature, social support is really important for mental health. It's a buffer to loneliness. And you can hear there with the elderly in particular, retirement often brings, feelings of loneliness and a loss of identity. It also helps with normalising experiences. So young mums who are home alone, say it's their first child, can hear about each other's parenting experiences, get out of the house. And loneliness is a great buffer to stress and depression, and that's quite a robust finding over many decades. And that's what we're hearing about, a whole lot of social support that keeps people feeling okay and
so
good.
So having good neighbourly relationships can actually improve your health.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, offers lots of social support.
Andrew?
Jump in there and say, I think that's exactly what Cindy and John have touched on, is that in the last, say, 40 years, which is how long I've been alive, our communities have changed. And John put it really well, because once mums were home during the day looking after the kids, so there was a network of mums at home during the day keeping the community going. In the last 40 years, that's changed because both parents have to work these days. So our communities have changed. They've changed dramatically. So to put those networks back in place in some other way is really integral.
And there's probably a lot of other factors going on here as well, Andrew. While social networking enables us to keep in contact with people a long way away, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to improve your contact with people around you. And perhaps there's that sense that it's not as important to have that physical contact with people so close to you.
Yeah, I'm often surprised at that people were prepared through Facebook and other programs to have a relationship with people on the other side of the world, sometimes whom they have never met, but often are a little bit timid about going a couple of metres next door and saying to the neighbour, "G'day, this is who I am."
All right, 1300 225 576 is the number here. Life Matters is the program you're listening to on RN right across Australia, and we're discussing neighbours, whether they're good or they're bad. Your stories are welcome this morning. 1300 225 576. Bob's in Geelong. Hello, Bob.
Yeah, good day.
Good day to you. So, what's your take on the nature of the neighbour?
I got a bit of a kind of a time frame. I came to Australia I'm 65, I came here 39 years ago. And I first, I'm a construction worker, so, I'm a working class person. And I lived around the joint, but to cut to the quick, I moved to Brunswick, a one-way street in Brunswick in Melbourne in 76. And our daughter was born there. And it was the most amazing place I'd ever lived in my life. It was like, we called it the United Nations. It had every nation under the... And it was... And the most grumpy bloke in the street, by the way, was the Australian. and it was just amazing. I'll never forget it, because it was one of them, the little old houses where the... You had a little veranda, and then next to the veranda was a footpath. So we'd sit on the veranda and have a few beers. The kids would play footy in the street or cricket. And, and to show you how good it was, when my wife gave birth to our first child, I got a knock on the door. She was in the hospital. I got a knock on the door, and there was the next door's neighbour child with a cooked meal for me.
Oh, isn't that fantastic? Great story. Thanks so much, Bob. Good on you.
Rightio.
Robin in New South Wales, good morning to you.
Yes, good morning. Yes, I had a double whammy. I've got a beach house at Smith Lake, in the south of Foster, and I've got an inner city property, and I had lovely neighbours, elderly on one side, and a young woman who did a beautiful parterre garden on a rental property, like a terrace, and she got moved out, and they put a whole lot of another race in there. And there used to be 15, 20 people most evenings. and early mornings, and we call them just party animals, and they just partied on five or six nights a week, screaming and yelling. And
what did you approach them and say, you know, you're keeping us awake?
Yes, I did that.
And what was their response?
No response. So I ended up calling the police every time they had a party. Every time they went past, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, I'd ring the cops, and they'd come, because I'm working, and my son is living here as well, and he works early morning. And anyway, it took about nearly 3 years for the police to sort them out. I think they find the owner now because they're coming out so often.
Yeah.
And I've got another one up, the one at Foster. He carried on for about 2 years until he got charged. I had an events number from the police.
It's very stressful, isn't it? I mean, this sort of having to deal with these sorts of issues.
Well, going to work with no sleep, that was the problem.
Yeah,
I nearly passed out at work on one occasion because it was night after night.
Mm. Sorry to hear that, Robin, but thanks for your story. I appreciate it.
Yeah, okay then.
1300 225 576. Carolyn is in the ACT. Good morning, Carolyn.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, well, what are your neighbours like?
Currently, the best.
Oh, you're breaking up a little bit there. What was that?
Currently, neighbours are the best.
Excellent.
But I've had the whole range. I have moved house because of my neighbours.
Really? Why?
I had neighbours coming in when I was out and destroying my property, harassing me, making false reports to child protection, all kinds of awful things. I've had taken neighbours to mediation after their kids trashed my house. But I've had another neighbour who invited me to...
So your response to it in the end was to move, was it?
With the really bad ones, yes, it was. Because if you share a fence line, ultimately, no matter, there will be no legal resolution. Sorry, I've practiced as a lawyer,
right?
And I know that even if you win an action against a neighbour, while ever you share a fence, if they want to be difficult, they will be. So for your own peace of mind, you know, sometimes it is better to move, but.
Which
currently,
is a very sad outcome, really.
I was interested in your caller who said that she was in Yakandanda and they were all at a similar stage of life. In my street, it ranges from a pregnant lady with a toddler, teenage boys, primary school kids, young adults, young, you know, still living with their parents, young people recently married, the whole range.
Mm.
And everybody gets on. Like, if anyone is... People spend a lot of time in my street at the front of their houses.
It's a lovely thing, and I know Andrew.
And everybody waves, you know, when you get, you know, like if somebody, you know, doesn't wave, you go, oh, it's okay.
What's wrong?
Yeah.
Good on you. Thanks for the call, Carolyn.
Thank you.
Claire's in New South Wales. Good morning, Claire.
Hi, Claire.
Now, you've had some bad experiences.
Yes, yeah. Well, my situation is that my husband and I live in a semi-detached house. It's only a two-bedroom house.
So it's not even a fence between you, it's just a wall.
There is a fence. There's a backyard as well.
Right.
And we've lived here for 18 years. We bought the house and own the house. And next door it's owned by the Department of Housing, and it's leased on a one-year basis to women and their children through a government agency.
So
there's a turnover
every
year.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's been fine many times, but it's often, probably at least half the time we've been here, it's been really bad. And we've had police here. The problems are noise. Oh, there's been, you know, there's been drug dealing and...
So are you, I take it each time a new person moves in, you sort of hold your breath wondering what kind of neighbour they're going to be.
Yeah, and we find when the noise is, you know, that's been the main problem. Because often there's several issues that we're concerned about. There's no way the agency cannot be appealed to. They don't, you know, they don't seem to be enforced. If they have any rules, we don't even know what the rules are about how many people can live in the house. There's often, you know, they move in. It's only a two-bedroom house. There's been up to 10 people living in the house.
So a lot of grey areas that you're
dealing
with.
Yeah, there's some of the women. I mean, they're obviously, you know, doing it tough. It's a peppercorn rent. Some of them are prostituting themselves. Some of them are obviously doing child mining for large numbers of children, including on Friday and Saturday nights, late into the night.
Sounds like a very tricky situation. What effect has it had on you, Sandra?
Well, very, very stressful.
Yeah.
I have a stressful job. And, coming home to here, and sometimes, we called the police once and they came in, there was 10 children in the house. This was at 11 o'clock at night, all very young. We know they're young. They're riding their tricycles up and down the hallway. Mm. And they said neither of the, there were two adults in there, and neither of those adults were the parents of any of the children there.
All right.
The agents and the police say they can't do anything. We've also offered mediation, one very, very bad recent case. We offered mediation with the agency and the police because this was going to come to probably some, you know, criminal act in someone, you know, smashing someone's door in. And they, neither of the agency didn't respond, and the police just said it was none of their business.
Yeah, Sandra, look, it's a difficult situation. The best of luck with it, but obviously you're in a slightly thorny spot. Thanks for the call this morning, though. Appreciate it. Okay. Andrew, it raises some interesting questions, though, is, you know, how... because there's been a lot of light and fluffy and warmth in a lot of these conversations, and then we've had the opposite side, which is the strain and the stress that bad neighbours and bad relationships with your neighbours can induce in you. What's the best way to talk with your neighbours about, well, things like noise, for example, or asking them to turn it down? Is there a problem or a fear that perhaps you're going to start getting too territorial when you start moving into those areas?
Yeah, look, I think we're often scared of those television programs at 6:30, which produce the Neighbours from Hell stories. And a lot of those stories could have easily been resolved very, very simply quite early if one of the neighbours who was feeling the issue, who was being bothered, just went next door politely and said, look, I just want to let you know that, and whatever it is that the circumstances, you know, renovating your house at 10 o'clock at night while the kids are trying to go to sleep, or, you know, loud music at 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever, just to say, I just want to let you know that whatever it is bothering me. And just, you know, can we come to some sort of arrangement or an agreement that, you know, you drop the volume, or, you know, you don't do your sanding after 7 o'clock at night. And I often think, you know, again, we're nervous about approaching our neighbours that way, and then it festers and it becomes a really, really big sore point for us and our families until it gets to an almost impossible situation. But the thing that I've learned from just this morning listening to the calls that we've had is that, you know, a lot of people are trying to be proactive. They are trying to have that conversation with the neighbour. That's the problem. And it's really disappointing when there are agencies behind the scenes that won't respond.
Mm. Cindy, what's your take on these kinds of relationships and sorting them out? People do get territorial about their homes, don't they? Understandably, you want it to be a safe haven. And when there is a feeling that, whether it's through noise or through, you know, physical space, if somebody is impinging on that territory and that safe haven, it can really affect you.
Yeah, I guess, you know, the opposite to social support is feeling quite stressed by your neighbours. And I think also, you know, keeping those lines of communication open. So even just a letter in the, in the letterbox, or letting neighbours know that you're going to have some construction happening before it starts to happen, often can make things a bit easier, just to preempt things and for them to know what's going on and give them a chance to maybe exit the house during that day, or, I guess just being as open as you can. Most people are pretty receptive to those things, but yeah.
Most are, although we've heard a few cases this morning where people are not.
Pretty extreme cases, yeah. And I guess that's where just going to the police is, you know, if you're hearing domestics, you don't have to get involved. You can just call the police, especially if children are involved and you can hear, you know, kids in distress, then you don't have to knock on the door. You can just call the local police.
All right, a few more calls this morning here on Life Matters. We're discussing neighbours, the good, the bad, and occasionally the ugly too. Sandra in Victoria, good morning to you.
Oh, good morning. I'd like to discuss the advantages of cross-generation neighbours.
Aha, this is something we haven't really broached all that much this morning. Yes, what's your experience in this area?
Oh, I'm a retired school teacher in a country town, and 10 years ago our neighbours changed to a family with 5 young children, ranging from a baby to a 10-year-old, and we were a little apprehensive about that. But it works out perfectly. They have holidays during school holidays and we look after their dog. We never go away in school holidays now and they look after our dog. When my grandchildren come up to play, the girls from next door come and organise them and play games, and they even call me grandma as well. And if their parents are away doing something over a weekend, they'll check if we're home as a bit of security for the kids to ring us up if they have a problem. They're even at the school I used to teach at, so they come over with their friends to check in old school magazines about what the kids' parents were like at school, because I usually taught them as well. Mm. And it's and the third one's now just got her L plates, and they bought my car, so she's going to be hooning around the town in my car.
Sandra, it sounds to me, just listening to the smile in your voice when you're talking about this, it sounds like you get a great deal out of this. What do you feel about what it brings to you, having that kind of relationship with your neighbours?
Oh, it's great. My grandchildren are down in Melbourne and I don't see them as often as I'd like. And I've got these built in, mainly the three younger girls that come over and, visit, and I let them cook gingerbread houses and things at Christmas. And it's like having a bit of an extended family next door. I love it when they call me grandma down the street in the car park.
I bet you do. Thanks for the call this morning, Sandra.
Okay, thank you.
Gay's in Tasmania. Good morning, Gay.
Hello. Excuse me. Listening to this discussion this morning, it's made me very nostalgic for the street that I grew up in a lovely suburb in Hobart.
Oh, yeah.
There was a great sense of community in that street, and probably like a lot of people who were born in the 50s, and, you know, I grew up in the 60s in this street, everybody knew each other, all the neighbours knew each other, young families, all the kids played together. We'd go off for, you know, all day in the summer holidays with the dogs and picnic lunches and go down to the beach together. And after my parents died, I received a beautiful letter from one of the neighbours saying that my mother was the first person in the street to get a steam iron and everyone borrowed the iron. And I remember really strongly my neighbours across from us, they were the first people in the street to get a TV, a black and white TV, and we were all in that house watching television.
Transfixed, isn't it? Is that experience, is it replicated elsewhere in your life? Have there been other neighbours that have lived up to that first very, I guess, high standard for you?
Bringing up my own daughter has been really different. She's an adult, young adult now. We moved from one rented place to another for a long time, so it was hard to establish those really strong connections with families. But as I've gone through, you know, life and lived in different places, I've always reached out to neighbours. And now I live in a block of flats, and I bought my flat, and I now have connections with people in this block of flats. And in fact, I have been teeing with the idea of organising like a Christmas party in the flats, because for me it's really important to have that connection with people. Otherwise you feel quite isolated.
I'm speaking on behalf of Andrew, but I would encourage you to do it, I think.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I've lived in places where I've had shocking neighbours. I lived in a suburb for 7.5 years here in Tasmania with my daughter, and it felt as though I was out of my tribe. Mm. And I think that's something really important too, to recognise the people around you, if they are your kind of people, or you work it out somehow.
Yeah, you work it out, I think.
Yeah.
Good on you, Gay. Thanks for the call. Kevin's in New South Wales. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. After living many years in the city, I inherited a house in a large regional city in New South Wales. An aunt, 90, died. She had a neighbour that was very helpful to her, but I think my aunt always paid her for the job she did. Anyway, I found once I moved in, she was constantly coming in, into the house, into the garden, using the side gate, and I was getting sick of it, and I thought, how am I going to get out of this? And so eventually I had some cementing done, put a chain on the front gate. She let people walk through the side dividing gate onto the cement area. So that was it. I was able to go in and say, look, this is no good. I'm going to seal that gate up. And really, since then, and she was left some money in my aunt's will too. And she was a little bit titchy about that. So since then, I haven't spoken to them, and I find it's much better that way. Mm. And after living in the city for 40 years, I'm very wary of neighbours. Mm. I've owned units, and you get a little bit too friendly, then something will happen with the body corporate or something, and you find it's really difficult once you've...
Mm. So. You've raised a couple of sort of interesting aspects of this, because throughout this conversation we've been saying how great it is to have those strong relationships with your neighbours and the positive effects that can bring. But we haven't really broached what you have brought up, and that is the fact that sometimes neighbours can be almost too friendly, that they can be intrusive into your privacy. Cindy, how do you respond to that?
I guess that's where, establishing boundaries from the outset if you can. So once you move in, sometimes you'll hear a bit of gossip about the neighbours, working out who you want to be friends with, who you don't really want to be friends with. And you know, your house is your personal space, especially if you do stressful work. Coming home is really important to be able to unwind and relax. You don't want your neighbour intruding. And I guess that's where you can always just have a chat to them through the screen door, or you know, suggest that if they wanted to have a chat, that you could do it outside of the house, so you have more control over when you can leave or when they can leave.
Mm. Andrew Heslop, the founder of Neighbour Day, can neighbours be too neighbourly?
Yeah, look, I think this is one of those examples that they can, but I think what you need to do is set a new boundary. You're the new neighbour, you're the new owner of the home, and say, look, I'd prefer if you didn't do X, Y and Z, and I know you had that, in this case with Kevin, you know, I know you had that great relationship with my aunt, but I value my privacy a little bit more. So, you know, happy to see you, but, you know, please knock and come in the front gate.
Good on you, Kevin. Thanks for the call this morning. Deb's in New South Wales. Good morning, Deb.
Good morning.
You're in rural New South Wales.
Rural New South Wales, not 13 kilometres from a fairly major tourist centre that's not far from Melbourne. We're living on a farm, and in the past we're surrounded by other farming families. That's changed to a degree, and we have quite a lot of different blocks now with people who come up and from the city and have weekenders here, really. So on either side of us, and some years ago, our my in-laws, one passed away and one moved into town, and a much younger brother moved back from overseas with his family, and that turned really sour very quickly, because I tried to set boundaries and they weren't appreciative of those, and there was no discussion. They didn't want to talk. But then on the other side, we have these other new neighbours who are really friendly, and we get on very well with them.
Mm. Andrew, Deb has mentioned something that we haven't broached very much, and we're running out of time, but of course the nature of how we live, not just in big cities but also in rural areas, is changing, and this is in particular with the inclusion of a lot more high-density living. The quarter-acre block that used to be so much a part of the Australian reality is increasingly less and less the way that people live. How is that changing the idea of the neighbour?
I think that we're becoming more conscious of the people that live around us, but we're also having to take a step back and say, okay, what do I expect from the community that I live in now? And when we're living closer together, we just need to be, I think, more conscious of how our own actions impact upon those who live around us. And that's been a big issue, particularly in some of the older suburbs in all of our capital cities, where the big home has been demolished and apartments have been built. It changes the fabric and it changes the structure of the street, and we need to adapt to that.
Mm-hmm. Deb, thanks for your call this morning. Andrew, of course, we've spoken about the wonders of the neighbourhood and your involvement over the last decade for Neighbourhood Day, but you're stepping down.
I am. I made the decision, made the announcement this week that I'm stepping down from Neighbour Day after having led it and funded it for 10 years. It's time to pass the baton on to someone else. And I'm really happy to say that within hours of that announcement going out, the phone has been ringing non-stop with people saying, we'd really like to talk to you about this. So what an amazing legacy to be able to say, you know, created something, but, you know, somewhere out there, are people willing to take it on.
Is that a reflection on the way people have felt it's improved their neighbourhoods? Have you had much feedback over the last 10 years on what Neighbourhood Day has done?
Yeah, lots of feedback and lots from doing talk on the ABC, where people are conscious of their neighbours, but they forget because we're too busy, particularly those of us who live in urban areas, with our lives and careers and our families, that, you know, often until things go wrong, we don't really require our neighbours. And I know we're coming up to the news, but I just want to say, for those communities in the Blue Mountains that are experiencing bushfires, once the announcement has come from the state government and the agencies that it's okay to return to those places, everyone as much as they can, needs to go and visit. They need to go and spend money in the shops and the cafes and the service stations and all of those things to put money back into those communities for those people not only who've lost their homes but have also lost their livelihoods.
You know what, on that note, from the bushfires, my father-in-law's family bought a little property in the Blue Mountains, a place called Mount Irvine, back in the late 40s. And in 1957, the farmer that they bought it off, next door, they weren't there, but he saved his house and then he went down and saved their house in 1957. On Thursday night, the granddaughter of that same farmer saved their house, where she lives, who she's inherited the house, and then she went down the hill, again, nobody in this little cabin, and managed to stave off the flames and save that house. So, you know, that beautiful story about neighbours and really looking out for each other right across the generations. I think it's a lovely way to finish up this morning. Andrew, thanks so much. All the best with your future endeavours, and we look forward,
Robbie,
to seeing Neighbour Day, of course, for many years to come. Thanks for joining us this morning.
You're very welcome.
And thanks to you as well, Cindy.
Thanks, Robbie.
Dr. Cindy Knorr, a clinical psychologist, and Andrew Heslop, the founder of Neighbour Day. Thank you for your calls this morning as well. It's been fantastic to chat with you. I'll be back on Monday with more for Life Matters, again sitting in the chair for Natasha Mitchell. Stay tuned. Coming up in just a moment, Books and Arts Daily with Michael Cathcart. He'll be looking at a classic from the American literature. And thanks to all the team here at Life Matters as well. Have yourself a great weekend.
On the Media Report, three different takes on community media. One's emergency broadcasting, so vital in fires like those in the Blue Mountains west of Sydney, and vital too when we have the floods and cyclones and heatwaves later in the summer. There's also crowdfunding of journalism, getting people to give you money so you can cover something specific. And you'll hear about the regional paper that's campaigned successfully for its community. You can download the show from the RN website.